This is ESPN Radio.
Ian Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and on ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And we got a lot of guests coming up your guys' way. We got Thursday Night Football coming up. We'll talk to Stanford Steve to get your money right. Lewis Riddick, our ESPN Monday Night Football analyst, as well as Adoree Jackson in the NFL, both about what's going on with his current team and with his old college team, hiring Lincoln Riley, the proud USC Trojan here. But, Chris, we've also got Jeff Passan coming up in about 10 minutes, as you heard in the SportsCenter update, because while we've got all this football going on that we're excited about and all this college football coaching news that's been so much fun, the NHL season's going on, baseball decided a lockout was what they should be doing with their time.
Yeah, sometimes you got to understand your role and you got to know the pecking order when it comes to major team sports in this country. And baseball is not at the top of that list. So I'm trying to figure out what the owners and the players are doing. This is the owners being preemptive in terms of trying to initiate the lockout, but we'll get more into it with Jeff Passan. But it feels like a situation where it could be everybody ends up on the short end and losing out, because baseball, I don't know if they can afford to have a significant work stoppage that impacts 2022 season.
Nope, you're already trailing in so many ways a lot of the other major leagues around here. The last thing you can afford to do is threaten that. So we'll get an idea of what the stakes look like when we talk to Jeff coming up in about 10 minutes. We also want to hear from you. Be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. Hit us up at 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football's heating up, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. And, Chris, I know we talked about it a lot yesterday, but Thursday night football coming up with the Cowboys heading on the road to take on what looks like whatever is left of the New Orleans Saints at this point. This team's been about as beat up as any you're going to find. And now we'll get Taysom Hill taking the field at quarterback, getting his shot after dealing with a number of injuries from concussion to a tear in the plantar fascia in his foot. And in that process, he's going to be without both of his starting tackles and his starting running back. So, Chris, is there any way Dallas can mess this up at this point?
Yeah, they sure can. They can turn the football over and they can decide that they don't want to run the ball. And those are two of the things that the Dallas Cowboys haven't done well in the last month of football, where they've only won one game. So, I mean, this is one of those things. They've got to get that cleaned up. They've got to execute and they've got to play relatively mistake-free football. And what I mean by that is, beyond just the turnovers, not being penalized. Gojo, I didn't realize this until right before we started the show, but I looked it up. During the four-game span that the Dallas Cowboys are just coming out of, they are the most penalized team in the National Football League in terms of yards and in terms of number of penalties. Like, they are giving lesser teams opportunities to be able to hang in there, and that's not something that you can afford when you're trying to build momentum and get ready for the postseason run that Jerry Jones and the rest of the people in the front office are envisioning for this club. So even though the Cowboys got a lot of people coming back that are significant contributors, guys that can have an impact on this team winning, they've got to start getting into a groove and playing their best ball of the season. This is the time in the calendar where, again, you want to start to build some momentum toward the postseason, and the Dallas Cowboys seem to be going in the opposite direction.
Yeah, it's been a struggle to say the least, but boy, oh boy, if you were looking for a slump buster, this seems to be the one, because on defense,
hello,
you mentioned, we have got both the starting tackles, Teron Armstead and Ryan Ramczyk, who, when they are on the field, are two of the best in the NFL, going up against Micah Parsons, who, Chris, I don't know, you tell me. I thought with him coming out of Penn State, his best reps were going towards the quarterback, and as he is now the NFL's reigning defensive rookie of the month and comes into this game with a sack in four straight games, with a chance to become the first rookie with five in five straight games, I feel like him as a pass rusher in this game could be the biggest influence, even with Amari Cooper coming back.
Well, that's assuming that you're going to see some conventional offense and conventional sets from this New Orleans Saints offense. And I don't necessarily know that that's what Sean Payton is going to roll out there with. Just because they're so shorthanded when it comes to the skill position players, I think it's going to be Taysom Hill in that Swiss Army knife type of role. It's going to be him being a runner and being able to bring in extra tight ends, extra offensive linemen, and really just try to shorten the game in that way, because, you know, from a firepower standpoint, you can't compete with the Cowboys. So the best thing that you can do is allow your offense to be able to sustain drives by going with heavy sets and being able to run the football and allow the clock to tick. I think that has to be Sean's mentality going into this game, because the Dallas Cowboys, both on offense and on defense, it feels like they have more right now. So I don't know that this is going to be one of those matchups where it's straight up. This is going to have to be a lot of smoke and mirrors from Sean. Not to say that he's above being able to get that done, because we know from an X's and O's standpoint, he's one of the best in the business, and his defensive coordinator, Dennis Allen, ain't bad as well. So this is one of those where your coach has to try to put you in positions to be able to have success, to make it a fourth quarter game. And I think Sean is going to use Taysom more so as a runner than a passer in order to get that done.
Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty and Randy Mueller, former NFL GM, including with a stop down in the New Orleans Saints, joined Spain and Fitz last night and kind of hinted at what you just mentioned here, that as we get Taysom Hill trotted out here at quarterback now, it's starting to feel pretty desperate in the Big Easy. The answer's probably not there, Chris. And I think for the Saints, I know you and I both agree, we don't think Sean Payton getting moved to some other team the way that was hinted at by Keyshawn Johnson the other day on ESPN Radio makes a ton of sense. But the quarterback situation at this team is looking dire heading into the future, depending on, all right, even after he comes back from injury, how much are you trusting what you saw from Jameis Winston? Do you want to hand the keys over to Taysom Hill long term and trigger that massive bump in his contract? Because really, financially, it is tough to see a world where they're in position to go out and land a big fish this offseason.
Yeah, it's tough, especially when you look at their cap. Going into 2022, they're in salary cap hell. I want to say they're $60 million beyond the salary cap threshold. Ooh. So that's a problem for the Saints. Now, they can rework some contracts, move some money, and give themselves some relief. But, yeah, in order to find one of those veteran quarterbacks, whether it's Russell Wilson, whether it's Aaron Rodgers, if you're going to make a run at one of those guys and fork over a ton of draft picks, you also have to be able to make the salary work. And I just don't necessarily see a world where that exists. But at the same time, the in-house options that you have aren't really appealing. You gave Jameis Winston a shot. He tore his ACL. We don't know what he's going to be coming off of that injury. And we don't know what we're going to see from Taysom in the last month of the season. And we know, based on the last month from Trevor Siemian, that just ain't good enough. So it doesn't feel like there are a whole lot of options that Sean Payton and the Saints have. But, I mean, with that brain trust with Mickey Loomis and Sean at the helm, I know that they'll figure out something. They'll figure out a viable option. And if you're a quarterback that's a veteran that's looking for a place to win now, New Orleans seems like it's set up to be able to do that.
That's the thing. If you were to erase money from this, which Lord knows the New Orleans Saints are to the salary cap what the Rams are to first-round draft picks, they
Hello.
Can somehow treat them all like they're not real and make the money work when they need to. So if anyone can make it happen, it's probably Mickey Loomis and company there. But, Chris, you're right. It is going to look like a long shot, and that's why – heading into tonight, the Dallas Cowboys, man, oh, man, we're not in must-lose. We know about, you know, must-win territory. We know about their division. But going on the road, 4.5-point favorites in the Caesars Superdome down there, you got to make this thing work, and you got to make it look good in the process because they are limping in on that other side. Now, we can get into plenty more of that in a little bit, get you ready for Thursday Night Football tonight. But coming up in about 30 seconds, we will check in with Jeff Passan, our ESPN MLB insider, try and figure out where the hell baseball goes now that the players have been locked out by Major League Baseball. We'll do all that after this word from Wendy's. Now, a better breakfast starts with a better biscuit. Hell yeah. That's why Wendy's is serving a hot and buttery Wendy's breakfast biscuit with bacon or sausage, egg and cheese for just $1. That's oven-baked bacon or savory breakfast sausage with a fresh cracked egg. And cheese. Wow, you get cheese too. All in a buttery, flaky biscuit for just $1. So don't risk your biscuit someplace else. Get to the nearest Wendy's drive-thru during breakfast hours and get your Wendy's breakfast biscuit with sausage or bacon, egg and cheese, all for $1. Limited time only at participating U.S. Wendy's. Kenny and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Devin Cain showing up and showing out on the production as Major League Baseball has locked out their players in this offseason here. We've known this is looming for a while, and so to help get us updated on what is at stake here, we head to the Goodyear Hotline to talk to ESPN MLB insider Jeff Passan. Jeff, we appreciate you giving us some time. I know this is something that has been hinted at even going back to during the pandemic offseason as we were heading into that fall trying to get baseball's postseason played. But as we set the table right now, as the players have been locked out, what are the key issues that are at stake right now between the league and its players?
Mike, I hate to do this and be that guy, but 5 years ago today, I wrote a story coming off the last collective bargaining agreement saying that there's going to be a labor war in 2021. So I'm not trying to call myself like Miss Cleo or anything here, but this thing has been in the offing for 5 years plus now.
I'll call you Mr. Cleo, Jeff. I'll happily do it.
You know what I think? I'll take that. Cleo's not exactly a name. Do I look like a Cleo?
You know what? If I squint hard enough, probably not, Jeff, but we're going to workshop it anyway and find something that works for you.
I think my favorite Cleo is Cleo McDowell. Is it not?
That is an absolutely stellar
Great call,
Cleo.
Jeff.
Thank you. The issue, you say, what are the issues? It's not issues, it's issue. And the issue is money. And money fuels every work stoppage that we've seen, whether it is baseball, basketball, football, hockey, wherever there is a work stoppage in sports, or frankly, just in life, it tends to be driven by money. And if you look at what's happened in baseball, revenues, pre-pandemic especially, have gone up and salaries have not. And players are mad about that, and they want a bigger chunk of the pie. And Major League Baseball is pretty much like, now we're happy paying you what we pay you. We can distribute it however you want it. If you want to get players paid younger, then we're going to take a haircut off the top. If you don't, otherwise, we're perfectly happy with this system. And this negotiation essentially is about how much money can Major League Baseball Players Association leverage out of Major League Baseball.
Now, Jeff, I know Major League Baseball doesn't have a salary cap, but I know players are looking around at the respective clubs that don't necessarily look at every single year and trying to be competitive and essentially tanking and not spending a lot when it comes to player cost. Is there a potential mechanism that Tony Clark has suggested that could have a minimum spend for all the teams in the sport to kind of raise the floor when it comes to salaries around the sport?
It's interesting, Chris, because Major League Baseball actually did propose a salary floor, and the Players Association rejected it outright because there's a general guiding principle in labor economics, which is that if you have a floor, you also have a ceiling. And while there are people out there who reasonably argue that the competitive balance tax or luxury tax threshold that exists these days does serve as a soft ceiling, it's still not written into law that you can only spend a finite amount of money in baseball. So while the floor would force teams like the Baltimore Orioles, whose current payroll is under $40 million or less than Max Scherzer is going to make in 2022, or the Cleveland Guardians or the Pittsburgh Pirates, you know, teams that have payrolls in a similar range, to drastically bump up their spending, the concern is that it would also have a deleterious effect at the top. And that's where so many of the gains in baseball and really, you know, across sports are made, from those big market, big spending teams that are willing to go out there and lavish $43 million a year on Max Scherzer and give Mookie Betts $365 million. And, you know, you see these mega contracts. They tend to come from the biggest market teams. Even the Texas Rangers this week, who gave Corey Seager $325 million. You know, Dallas isn't a small market. You know, it's one of the five biggest media markets in the country. And I think what the union's afraid of is, if you put a floor in place, then you're inviting a cap. And when you have teams that are clearly willing to go beyond what the top number of a cap would be, you don't want to limit them from doing that.
Talking with ESPN baseball insider Jeff Passan. And Jeff, just to follow up on what you just said, we have seen a flurry of activity in free agency the past week or so trying to get these deals in before the CBA expired last night. What happens to guys that haven't gotten deals and haven't been signed? What happens to them in their free agency as we go through this lockout?
Yeah, they get to sit around like the rest of us and just wait. Because there are no free agent signings, there are no trades, there are no trade discussions, there are no free agent discussions. It's pretty clear. When you have a lockout, when you have a work stoppage, the communication between the players and the teams simply cannot happen. They are legally bound not to talk with one another. So, you know, Carlos Correa, he's going to have a long winter. Freddie Freeman, long winter. Trevor Story, I mean, plenty of other guys, big names who are still out there who didn't sign amid the frenzy of this week. And I think in the end, what it's going to lead to is something very similar, honestly, to what we saw this week. What we saw this week was, frankly, I've been doing this job almost 20 years now. It was probably the most exciting week of free agency I've seen. And whenever the lockout stops, whenever a collective bargaining agreement is reached, we're going to see it again because there's going to be a flurry of signings. And when it happens, it is going to be fast and it's going to be furious.
Jeff, as far as when it happens, when a new CBA gets done, do you ultimately think this gets done well before we start infringing upon any of the actual regular season games that get played?
No, because I think that, listen, what we saw this week is really instructive to me, right? What gets people moving, whether it is with free agent contracts, on Capitol Hill, anywhere you're talking about a negotiation, it's a deadline. And the deadline to sign players was going to be midnight going into December 2nd, and that was because the lockout was coming and everybody knew it was coming. The deadline, Mike, to get, you know, to ensure that there are no regular season games lost is probably about March 1st or so. I mean, we saw in the COVID season that players can get ready during this modified spring training in about 3 weeks. And I think they probably want to give a little bit more runway just because of all the free agent signings that need to happen. So to me, if there's no deal in place March 1st, that's really starting to threaten the season. And nobody wants to lose regular season games. You know, there have been three lockouts in the past. Never has a game been lost due to a lockout.
Well, we hope that's certainly the case that keeps up here, as MajorLeagueBaseball.com is really going to need help with the content if they want to keep making sure they can't talk about the players on that right now. Jeff Passan, our ESPN MLB insider, a.k.a. Mr. Cleo. Devin, we'll have you back soon for more readings, okay, Jeff?
I look forward to it. And Mike, in your future, I see some ripped pants.
Oh, not again. Oh, every 4 months. Jeff, I thought you were going to say hair. We appreciate you, buddy. Jeff Passan, our ESPN MLB insider here. Yeah, I have now ripped a pair of pants, I think, quarterly for the last 3 years, Chris. I don't know what it is. I don't know why I'm attempting these feats of, like, hip fluidity-related events, but I have torn – I managed to tear, I won't say the brand name here, but a pair of pants that aren't supposed to rip recently succumbed to my might the other day. So it's just is what
it
is.
Yeah, I don't know how you're doing this. Why is this a pattern that you're falling into? Like, I'm all about having some ventilation and you know, being able to have some room to breathe. But come on, bro. You're not supposed to be ripping pants every other week.
I didn't think this was going to be my life going forward, Chris. I thought when I lost some of the playing weight, I was done with that. Clearly, I was wrong, and according to Jeff Passan, a.k.a. Mr. Cleo, I have more of that to look forward to in my future. Coming up next, we'll see what's in the immediate future for Notre Dame's head coaching search, why they may have found their man, and all of the reasons why this is going to be a home run hire for the Irish, next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Play a little quarterback roulette with the New York Football Giants in about 10 minutes here because we're getting some wild suggestions from some of our friends around the network here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. I know Chris's head has been ready to explode with some of the conversation around the Giants and who may or may not be playing quarterback for these guys soon.
Yeah, I just can't with the takes, Gojo. Like, they're just, people are getting out of pocket, and it's getting to the point now where I really want to ask them, do you actually hear yourself? Like, do you believe some of the things that you are spewing out of your mouth? Because they absolutely make no sense about it. But we got plenty of time to get to that in this show. We've got that lotted out later on down the line. We got some stuff we got to talk about with your alma mater, Notre Dame.
Yeah, this is getting pretty interesting. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. And according to a lot of the reporting out there right now, as Notre Dame, who, again, in case any of you guys missed it, Brian Kelly is now the head football coach at LSU. I know, shocking stuff here. But as they have gone into their search for the next head coach, it seems by all the reports that defensive coordinator Marcus Freeman, who, again, was in his first year at Notre Dame, was formerly at the University of Cincinnati, and played for the Ohio State Buckeyes, has emerged as the leading candidate to become the Irish's next head football coach, sources told ESPN on Wednesday. There's no deal finalized right now, Chris, but Marcus Freeman is a 35-year-old former college linebacker at Ohio State who has risen through the ranks quick. So I'd ask you from an outsider's perspective, because I've been really close to this thing all week, and I want to make sure I'm not, you know, missing the forest for the trees type thing here, but should there be any concern for a program like Notre Dame coming off five straight double-digit win seasons going with a first-time head coach at the age of 35?
I mean, there's always going to be a little bit of concern because he's never worn the hat. He's never done the job before, right? And you're talking about one of the preeminent programs in all of college football. Like, Notre Dame is not a place that you would typically leave. Now, I'm sure Brian Kelly has his reasons, but based on what's happened the last 5 years and being able to have the longest streak of double-digit win seasons that the program has ever had going on right now, I just feel like the infrastructure in place, the guardrails are there for Marcus Freeman to be able to have success. And so if you're not deviating from some of the things that you've been doing in terms of your core systems and basically how you go about your business, then him not being in that CEO role is somewhat mitigated. But the thing that I think gets accentuated is the fact that he's the head coach, and now you're going to get somebody that's in there that's going to be able to relate to the players in a way that Brian Kelly never could. Like, that's the exciting part about it. I mean, Marcus Freeman is not that far removed from playing college football, so he understands this generation of athlete. He knows how to communicate with them, and I think that lends itself to being able to get the most out of their potential. Couple that with the fact that he's the mastermind behind the recruiting classes that Notre Dame has been able to put together over the last several years, and a big reason why the recruiting class coming up is going to be top five and the one after that is going to be top three. Like, I think those are significant reasons why Jack Swarbrick decided that he was going to give Marcus Freeman the opportunity to grow into the head coach's role, because a big part of being a good, successful head coach in college is being able to acquire talent, and Marcus Freeman has proven that he can do that.
Yeah, Chris, it's been a major uptick, right? If you look at most of the recruiting outlets for the last few years, Notre Dame's been a very good school when it comes to recruiting. Classes ranging anywhere from the rankings between, you know, 15, 10, 8, I think as high as 8 or 9 in recent years here. Notre Dame's current recruiting class is ranked in the top 5 in most circuits and ranked up there for the next year's class as well. So there's continuity in that. But Chris, you mentioned it, like, it feels like, especially whether it's college or the NFL, in this day and age, there seems to be a premium paid for being able to relate to players with all the change in the sport right now, with name, image, and likeness, and all of these unique challenges that pop up.
Oh, no doubt about it. And Gojo, I actually reached out to the head coach at Hilton Head High School down in South Carolina, and you might know it because a 5-star linebacker, All-American Jalen Snead, is one of the players down there who's a commit to Notre Dame. And I just wanted to get, you know, Coach Payne's perspective on the hire of Marcus Freeman. And he says he loves the guy. Like, he loves him, and all the coaches that he knows in the area love him. And as far as Jalen Snead is concerned, like, Jalen is 100% committed to Notre Dame because of Marcus Freeman. He said that Brian Kelly had very little influence in the recruitment process of Jalen, and had Marcus Freeman made the decision to leave Notre Dame, then Jalen Snead would probably decommit. That's what he said to me today. So, I mean, that just goes to show you how important, how integral Marcus Freeman is when it comes to putting together these recruiting classes, and that's got to be a huge win for Notre Dame in terms of making sure that you're going to be able to get the kind of recruits that it will take to be able to have continued sustained success, but also be able to compete at the highest levels of the sport and hopefully get into the college football playoff and compete for national championships. So I love the move of Marcus Freeman. I said it needed to be somebody that was a little bit on the younger side, somebody that could be there for a long period of time. And it feels like Marcus Freeman checks every single one of those boxes in terms of what Notre Dame was looking for from a profile standpoint.
Yeah, Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise here on Canty and Golic Jr. I completely agree. And we've seen this be successful in other places, right? Like, you look around the world of college football. I was blown away today. Adam Rittenberg, our ESPN college football reporter, tweeted this out. Dabo Swinney was 39 when he got the promotion at Clemson. Lincoln Riley was 33 when he was promoted to head coach at Oklahoma. Ryan Day was 39. I mean, you look in the NFL, you know, Mike Tomlin was young like that. I believe Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern was like 31 when he took over. Like, the circumstances around all these guys are certainly different, but what you mentioned here, the retention of Tommy Reese's offensive coordinator, Mike Elston, the D-line coach, Matt Bayless, their strength and conditioning coach, it's all going to be
around
him.
Who might be
him.
The most important position coach out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, Chris, that was a strength and conditioning coach who was at Virginia when you were there, right? Yeah,
absolutely. And here's the thing that people don't understand. You spend more time with the strength and conditioning coach than any other coach that's on staff. Like, he's the one that you got to make sure you get your three in-season lifts with. He's the one that you see the most in the offseason when you're not doing mini camp. I mean, not mini camps, but spring training, spring ball and all that other
basically
stuff.
Basically, like, mini camp.
That's the guy that you spend time with. So, I mean, like, the strength coach is a huge, huge advocate for your head coach. And so if you have that in place, if you have synergy between Matt Bayless and Marcus Freeman, then that can only work to the benefit of the program in terms of being able to have good relationships with your players, not just getting the guys to commit and come to school there, but actually keeping them there and allowing them to develop and not having those guys go into the transfer portal and all those other types of things. So I just think it's incredibly important in terms of being able to maintain positive relationships with your players. And when you got the head guy that's actually doing that rather than the position coaches bearing the burden of that in the program, I think that can only be a positive, because when you look at all the other big-time college programs, whether it's Alabama or what we saw with Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma and anticipate him doing out in Southern California, like, those coaches have good relationships with those players. They're in living rooms going to recruit those kids. And so now you'll have that same element at Notre Dame with Marcus Freeman.
Yeah, I think if this does end up being the call, and again, it's nothing official yet here, but all reports indicating that Marcus Freeman will be the next guy in charge at Notre Dame, I love this hire. I think there's a ton of room for growth in getting to be around Marcus, both covering him and meeting him at Notre Dame. He's a guy who really seems to get it and has connected with players very quickly already at Notre Dame in just his short year's time there. For people that look and say he's a first-time head coach, Notre Dame certainly has familiarity with that. Charlie Weiss, Bob Davey, going all the way back to Jerry Faust. Jerry Faust brought almost an entire staff from high school, directly from high school with him, and coached my dad there in a way that probably was never going to work. Bob Davey had to follow Lou Holtz. Charlie Weiss was taken over for teams that had lost, you know, won maybe 5-6 games the 2 years prior under Ty Willingham. What Marcus is stepping into right now is a program that understands internally how to get this done. He has coordinators with him that have been around this operation already. He's got continuity and support that very few of the other coaches I just mentioned had stepping into that role. So again, if Marcus Freeman is ending up being the guy, and right now reported to be the leading candidate for the next head coach at Notre Dame, I think there are a lot of reasons to be excited if you are a fan of the blue and gold. Coming up next, though, if you are a fan of just the big blue in New York City, we're going to try and figure out who your quarterback is going forward and give you the one name that is driving Chris Canty up a wall. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we had new USC head coach Lincoln Riley join the guys on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning. We'll hear what he had to say about the opportunity to revive that Trojans program in just a little bit. Also, we want to remind you to tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast, a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters presented by Supercuts. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily, available wherever you enjoy your podcasts. Michael Jr. and Chris Canty here. And Chris, proud former New York football giant, a Super Bowl champion with that organization. And so you care a lot about this team. And you read me a stat during the break here about what has happened to this franchise since you left here. Can you read that one for everybody? Because I was pretty blown away and honestly bummed out by this.
Yeah, so Gojo, I walked out of the building after the 2012 season with the New York Giants. Since then, the Giants have had exactly one winning season and they've had double-digit loss seasons in 7 of the last 8 years, and they're working on another one now. So that's where the New York Giants are. That's the state of affairs. I mean, we're talking about 5 consecutive double-digit seasons, including this year, which we feel like they're well on their way to. So it's one of those things where the franchise has this perception of who they are, and it doesn't match up with the reality based on what we've seen, you know, in the National Football League the last decade. It's just not. Giants pride themselves on being one of the flagship franchises, and right now they're a lot closer to where the Detroit Lions are or where the Cleveland Browns were in the early 2000s and early 2010s. Like, that's where the Giants are. It's a sad state of affairs. I wish that wasn't the case, but they've got to face facts. That's what it is.
It is the reality of the situation here. And so now that they've got these problems in the present, I want to focus on the future here. One of our colleagues said something wild about the future of the quarterback position in the New York Giants. I need Chris Canty to tell me why it's wrong. All right, so Damian Woody, our ESPN NFL analyst, was on Get Up today talking about the future of the Giants quarterback spot. Daniel Jones looks like he's going to give it a go this weekend, but he brought up another quarterback that might potentially land there in the future. Well, Chris, Russell Wilson to the New York Giants potentially in 2022. Tell me why there is no way in hell that's happening.
Well, first of all, Russell Wilson has never had a losing season in his NFL career. Never. I think he's only missed the playoffs once. Now, we feel like he's on the verge of guaranteeing that because his team already has 8 losses. One more would put him at that point. But the New York Giants in the last 5 years, Gojo, so since 2017, have a 22-53 record. Why would Russell Wilson want to sign up to come to the New York Giants? Like, I get it. He's married to Sierra. She would love to be in a major market like New York. But Russell Wilson wants to enhance his legacy, right? And in order to do that, he's got to be able to compete and win championships. Like, that's the only time you get in the conversation for GOAT, greatest of all time, or greatest for the era that you played in. And right now, that's not where Russell is. Like, we would all consider him an elite quarterback when he's healthy. But he's only got one championship on his resume to speak of, and a lot of that is based on what the Legion of Boom was able to do. So since this became Russell Wilson's team out in Seattle, he hasn't been able to take this team to where they want to go. And so I just look at this from the standpoint of, are you willing to trust the New York Giants, an organization that has been the definition of dysfunction for the last 5 or 6 years? Do you want to trust them with the prime of your career in trying to get to the pinnacle of the sport? I would argue no. And then beyond that, the Giants got to figure out who their general manager is, who their head coach is, and Russell Wilson is only a piece of the bigger picture for the Giants to try to solve. So I don't know, man. If you're Russ, why would you want to parachute in this situation? It seems as dysfunctional, if not more dysfunctional than the situation that you're coming out of.
I will say this, Chris. In a world where we have seen the New York Knicks manage to turn this thing around, I want to say that anything is truly possible in that regard, but man, I'm with you on this. Like, this one's a bridge too far for me. And I get all the off-the-field stuff. I get showing up to New York Fashion Week would be awesome. The Governor's Ball, all that good stuff. But that would be so secondary to what Russ is about at his core. What you mentioned, going out there, winning football games. He's already spent years complaining about not having enough on the offensive line, and he wants to walk to a place where that is going to be a major project this offseason to continue to improve because it just hasn't been good enough to give you a read on your current guy. No. That ain't going
to
happen.
Plus the draft picks, Gojo. If you send 2 first-round picks out to Seattle, then what do you have to rebuild the offensive line with?
You got a whole lot of nothing coming up there for Russell Wilson. So there's no way we think that's going to happen. Then again, we didn't think Lincoln Riley was going to be the new head coach at USC. We'll hear what he had to say this morning on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max next.